Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, Apple iTunes is going away, and on the show today, we'll talk about what that means to you. Peter Greenback with us. He's a computer consultant with Infostar.com, and he stops by every other month to help you with your tech-related problems. Besides iTunes, we'll talk about Apple's new operating system and an update to Windows 10. You can join the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Peter Green, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Always great, Larry.
So I'm pretty sure everybody listens. Well, maybe not everybody understands what Apple iTunes is, but just explain it anyway.
Well, you know, they created basically a marketplace and delivery mechanism for music. And then they added video, and then they added audio. You know, it was their way of paying artists for their works, mm-hmm. and also a digital delivery mechanism to get those works to the masses. And it became very popular very quickly. And then it added all these other things on, and it became crowded.
Yeah, and is that why they're replacing it?
Exactly. It became a crowded place, and it had a lot of digital content, and it was no longer just tunes. It was movies, audio, books, podcasts. So they split them up, and they announced it at their Worldwide Developers Conference and said that the next version of the OS, the Mac OS, Catalina, and then other OSs are going to follow suit, so like the iOS and so forth, to basically say it's no longer iTunes, it's these other areas of digital content, and it's a great marketing, I don't want to call it scheme, but it's a great marketing way to deliver now all of that those digital contents in separate entities. So they'll create apps or software to deliver those. And then the focus can be on, if you're just into movies and TV, you know, it's got that. You don't have to be bothered sifting through content that relates to music or podcasts or audio and so forth.
So the music going to be free?
Music's not going to be free. And, you know, as far as your, you know, gift cards and things like that, all that's going to be covered. That's, you know, okay. not an issue at all. Trust me, they have that stuff down pretty good.
Okay, so the music is still going to be there.
Yep. It's just organized. They'll call it Apple Music.
Okay.
You know, instead of iTunes.
And will you be able to use it to burn a CD?
Use it to be, you know, it shouldn't change in terms of what you can do with the digital content. The key thing to realize is that there's digital rights management involved. So when you say burning a CD, you know, then we're talking about something that's stretching the digital rights management. Because when you purchase music, or let's say digital content, when you purchase digital content, there are digital rights to that. When you make a purchase, that digital rights is now licensed to you for your use on your devices. But it's not, you know, a carte blanche to just do whatever you want with the digital content.
Share it with everybody else.
Right. Yep.
Who hasn't paid for it unnecessarily. So when it goes away,
it's not really going away. It's just changing its moniker, its name. And that it's organized by itself, because if you know, go back, let's say last year, you could go to now, but let's say last year with iTunes, you have TV, movies, podcasts. That's going to be pulled away. You're not going to see that separate, you know, all those content bundled together or mungled together. Mm-hmm. They're all going to be their own separate entities. So when you need to access music, you're going to go through Apple Music. If you need to access movies, you're going to go through Apple TV and so forth. So they're separate applications or software for that specific content.
So if you've already got like an Apple TV, is that going?
It'll have a software upgrade and probably just you know, make things
suddenly
more focused.
Appear.
It'll be more focused for Apple TV. You won't see the other digital components involved.
All right, so
it's to make it easier as well.
Yeah,
because it's separate. It's separating. You know, if you're into music but you don't want movies and other things, all that stuff is in front of you and it's crowded.
Yeah.
So now when you separate those out and just focus on the one content area, it makes it easier to deliver and organize content.
Yeah, and I'm not much of a music guy. I'm more of a talk and movie guy, so yeah. That actually just make it easier for me. Well, the new version of the operating system comes out this fall, right?
It sounds like a salad dressing, Catalina.
Yeah. What can you tell us about Catalina?
It's going to have some new features, just make you, you know, hopefully make you more productive. There's a feature called Sidecar to improve usability of your workspace. I have not previewed it, but, you know, it's like anything. It comes out. We see how people accept it, how it evolves. Some things have gone away that they've come up with because people didn't like it,
you know,
both for Windows and Apple. I've had software that, you know, when you get to the next version, I've had developers say, you might want to wait till the next one. They didn't quite, you know, get it right. Or if you look at Windows Vista, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not comparing Apple to Windows.
Right.
But you know, if you look at Vista, there were a lot of issues as related to Vista, you know, as an OS. So time will tell how well it is. I know there are some people that have upgraded Apple operating systems and have had total system crashes that have taken time to recover from, compatibility issues with software. So, you know, whenever you move forward, always make sure you back up your data. You know, so that you're covered because things do happen.
You mentioned Windows. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the, what is it, Bluekeep security problem with Windows?
It's code name or it's called Bluekeep. It has to do with older versions of Windows. So Windows 8's not affected. So Windows 8 users, I believe with Windows Vista, it's like a one-line fix. It's almost not even worth mentioning. Windows 10 users, everything's fine. It's when you go before that. So if you're using Windows XP, Windows 7. And what's significant is that these are operating systems, OSs, that Microsoft has said, hey, we're done. We're not supporting you. We have no interest in you. You need to move forward. We're not doing any more fixes to your operating system. So it's significant in that they're out there pleading, saying, hey, get the word out. If you're a user of Windows XP or if you're a user of Windows 7, and those are probably the two most popular, look into getting the fix to Bluekeep so it doesn't happen on your system.
So what is the fix then?
I put links on my Infostar.com webpage. There's a whole bunch of stuff that explains it. So it's basically affects legacy systems. There's their number they give to it is CVE-2019-0708, and it has to do with remote desktop services remote code execution vulnerability. That's their definition. And the National Security Advisory also warns that they consider it especially dangerous. So if you're holding on to those really old systems and using them, there are some countries that actually use our older operating systems. So I don't know how far our radio signal carries.
So it carries a long way. We got a call from New Zealand here not a couple of weeks back. So,
I think Windows 7 especially is – it's got some popularity in this country still, but also outside of the U.S.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today, talking with him. We started talking about iTunes and talking a little bit about Windows right now, but we'll take your computer questions as well whether it relates to those two topic areas or something else. I hope you'll join in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your computer and your software today with Peter Green of Infostar.com. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. Questions for Pete, I hope you'll give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. And we have open lines to get you on pretty quickly. Jim in Saukville has something for you, though, Pete. So let's go to Jim. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hey, good morning, Pete. I caught the very tail end of your comments before. I had understood that Windows 7 was covered through 21. Are you saying that they've stopped already?
Well, they're defining it as a legacy operating system that's affected by the Bluekeep vulnerability. I'm not sure on the support date. You might be absolutely correct, but they're just putting it under what they consider legacy systems. For example, I do not believe that you can actually purchase Windows 7 from Microsoft.
Yeah.
So that would mean it would be legacy in their eyes, even though they might have a future cutoff date of sometime in 2021. So, but you can buy Windows 10 from them.
So go ahead, Jim.
Is there a follow-on to Windows 10 yet?
Not that I have heard of. I'm sure, they're... They're working on all these different builds that they come out with. Like they had creators, and the most recent one is, I believe, 1903. So they keep coming out with large builds, but they have not made a public announcement of, like, what is the next Windows 10? What is the next version of Windows?
Okay. So there you go, Jim. So in other words, talk a little more about this Bluekeep problem. So what is it again?
It's if you don't put in the patch, they can remotely access your system and control your computer.
Oh.
So if you look at some of the problems that happened in probably a couple of years ago with WannaCry and NotPetya, where I talked about in a show about how one of the world's largest shippers was taken down in a matter of hours,
yeah,
and what kind of ramifications. They said the damages were in the hundreds of billions of dollars because of just what it did. It shut down computer systems that controlled terminals, controlled shipping. They didn't know what to pick up. They didn't know what to deliver. They didn't know where it went. They didn't know who it was supposed to go to. They just said, hey, go home. We don't know what to tell you. So you had 18-wheelers showing up at all these ports around the world going, we're here to pick up. No, you're not, because we can't let you in.
Boy, oh, boy.
And nothing could leave.
Your own computer at home, they mm-hmm. could somehow mm-hmm. manage maybe even to get into your bank accounts?
Possible. It's remote access to your system, and then, if you have things saved on your computer, depends on how much time they have.
Oh, boy. So the long and the short of that is you better take care of that.
If you have a version of Windows 7 or Windows XP, and I believe they included some server versions, so for some network software, and there are people that kind of like, hey, it works, don't fix it, and then they don't upgrade it. But we're talking about probably upgrades from maybe 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago that are still in place that have this vulnerability.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So that build release for Windows 10, what's that going to mean for users?
That they shore up the operating system, make it more stable, more secure, maintain compatibility with networking and other security issues that happen with the antivirus programs. It's a continuous ongoing update process that Microsoft has, and it seems to be twice a year. Happens in May, happens in the fall. If you remember one of the shows we talked about, one of those builds was, I believe it was 18, you know, there's so many, they start to blend together, but I think 1809 was in October of last year, and there was a problem with it, and one of my systems at work got it, and I was like, no. And I shut it off. It was too late. So the system already got it, and then I went through the tests, and it worked fine, so I kept it. But I shut off the updating on all the other computers around the office because I didn't want to go through it again. And then I went out online and said, well, what's going on with this? And all of a sudden there were reports of people having problems with their data, whether it was documents or music. They were losing them or they weren't having access to them. And I said, yeah, I'm glad I shut it off. And then Microsoft pulled it, and they also made an 800 number available for people to call that were having problems with it. So I waited probably 3-4 months before I started to apply it on other systems.
Wow.
And so far it's been fine. And I took the chance on the 1903 that just came out and updated my system, and it works fine. But I was having problems with it getting updates. And I was like, okay, let's force it to do this next build, and that's what I did. So you can actually download the entire version of these builds and try to make your system take the whole thing at one time.
Laura emailed to ask how hard it is to update from Windows 7 to Windows 10. Will she have to reinstall all her apps? How much
will she lose?
You know, can she do it herself, or would it be better to have a professional do it?
Well, it's a great question. One is you can, I believe you can download an application software from Microsoft to test to see the compatibility of your programs and whether or not they'll run on Windows 10. But the most important thing to look at is whether or not your hardware is capable of running Windows 10. Because if you've had a system for a long time, you really haven't kept up on the hardware. The hardware now is running up to 64 gigs of RAM support. And especially these high-end processors like the AMD Ryzen and the i7s from Intel and so forth, they really take advantage of this extra memory, and you know, your user experience is phenomenal. But whether or not your Windows 7 hardware can support the update to Windows 10, if you have 4 gigs of RAM and you try to put Windows 10 on your machine, it will probably work. But I don't know, you know, speed-wise, if you would be happy with the performance.
Yeah. So what do you need?
You can get by with 16, depends on the processor. More is better.
Yeah.
Hard drive, I wouldn't go less than a terabyte, is kind of pretty much a standard. But a lot of people are going to SSD drives, and some of those SS solid-state drives are super fast. I mean, you can get ones that will give you some speed and you'll like it, and then you can put a $200, $300, maybe $400 more into an SSD hard drive that's kind of like going from, you know, driving a car that goes 0 to 60 in like 15 seconds to, I guess Harley's got a new electric bike that goes 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. So, you know. If you like speed, you know, and you have some extra money, you can do it with some of these SSD drives.
Let's take some more calls. Again, by the way, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We've got open lines. Get you on pretty quick. Ron in La Crosse, we'll go to you next. Hi, Ron. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I got a question about iTunes. I have a Mac a Mini, and my operating system is, well, they show OS 10. It's not Windows 10. OS 10, the version is High Sierra 10.13.6. Now, will I still have iTunes in its original format? Because I listen to internet radio a lot, and it doesn't cost me anything, unlike, you know, music from the Apple Store. You mentioned that maybe if I upgrade to a later version of the Mac OS X, and OS X is in Roman numerals, the X for 10. But I just wonder, if I upgrade, would I lose that original iTunes format, or will I retain it if I stay in my present High Sierra version of OS X?
Well, you know, eventually, so the iTunes is changing. It's evolving into Apple Music. So their plan moving forward is to create separate applications, separate software, separate venues for music, for TV, movies, and podcasts. So they want to separate those out and make them easier to manage within those digital content spaces. So, you know, if you were to stay put with your Apple computer and, you know, work with iTunes, eventually you would probably get closed out of how they've managed their content because you're not going to be able to update iTunes.
Okay.
Does that help?
I guess so. I can see that.
They're just trying to change it.
I don't listen to it as much as public radio, which I listen to over the air or online. But, yeah. Okay. I'm not going to get any updates if I stick with High Sierra, maybe.
Correct. Because as you move on with the OSs, the operating systems, they're taking that out and making it three separate entities.
Yeah.
So it's going to, you know, to get to what you like is going to be focused in Apple Music versus iTunes. But if all you want are things you want in music, that's how you're going to get it.
Yeah.
If you don't move forward, they may change how the delivery happens with some of that content, and you may have bad links, or they may tell you to go to a different landing page, or they may say this is no longer supported.
So there you go. And you think about it, like just the number of podcasts that have been created in the last 5 years. I mean, thousands and thousands and tens of thousands.
I equate it to the explosion of desktop publishing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we had magazines, we had newspapers, and then all of a sudden the power of publishing came to the individual. Yeah. So it's very similar.
Very, very similar. Thank you so much, Ron, for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's take a call from Ivy in Evansville next. Hi, Ivy.
Hi. Perhaps you can give me an idea what to do, or my friend. I have Windows 10 on my computer, and last summer it crashed I don't know. I updated it, and I could not, it wouldn't boot up. Got all my stuff off of it through a back channel and the help of a friend, but it just kept trying to and then not doing it.
So it wouldn't reboot.
So what happens when you turn it on now, what happens is it just come up to a blinking cursor on a black screen?
Yeah, something like that, yes.
Okay. Do you have the Windows 10 disk for it?
Probably not. I don't remember.
Okay.
I was just wondering if there's any fix online or if other people experience this where they just, you know, they updated and it just killed it.
So there's a couple of things that you can try. One is if you had a Windows 10 disk, you could try to do a Windows repair. So you might want to do some searches on Windows repair.
Yeah.
DISM is another online way to repair it, but you need to have access to it needs to be hooked up to the internet and also needs to be able to give – you have to have access to a command prompt to issue the DISM command. So, again, that's something you could search online. And the other thing is to try – again, you have to have access to a command prompt – is the scan now command as well. I would – based on what you're telling me – see if you could bring it up in safe mode. So if you hit, when you boot it up, if you hit F10 over and over and over and then see what your startup options are, it may come up and say it didn't start up or shut down properly or had issues, and see if it gives you prompts for running repair that way as well. So you do have a number of options to try. It's always good. It's always good to have the operating system disk or some kind. You can create a repair disk within a Windows install. You have to go into the control panel, and I don't remember specifically where it is, but you can look online and say, "How do I create a Windows 10 repair disk for my system?"
So, do you know of anybody else who experienced this
with upgrades and having?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, lots of people.
I've had it. Yep, and all the things that I told you I've done.
Hey, I appreciate your help.
It's not, I know, you know, the heart kind of sinks in your stomach going, what the heck? Sometimes you can bring it up in the safe mode and then restart it. Sometimes there's a hardware issue that's lingering that you don't know about and the update just kind of triggered it. So there are other things other than just trying to fix the operating system that could be involved.
Yep.
Okay.
So, right. You know, hopefully some of those suggestions you might be able to make it work. But like I said, it's hardware as well, not just software that you're dealing with.
There you go, Ivy. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And good luck. Hope you can get that fixed. Paul in Mondovi, it's your turn. Hi, Paul.
How you doing? Say, I have Windows 7. I want to update or will need to update to Windows 10, but I would have to do it at dial-up speeds. You know, it would take me a month to download it. it isn't like when I did Windows 98 years ago, they actually sold you disks, you know, yeah. And you installed the disks.
Mm-hmm. So, what kind of system do you have? You're talking about going from Windows 7 to 10. What kind of system do you have?
It's a desktop.
Mm-hmm. How old?
It's about 4 or 5 years old, but mm-hmm. It was pretty healthy when it was built. I got a terabyte hard drive. I got 6 processors. It was overbuilt when I built it.
Okay.
It looks like a small server.
All right. Well, you can buy Windows 10 on a disk.
You can.
Yeah. You can probably, the place that I buy a lot of stuff is on eBay.
Okay.
You could probably just do a search and see what comes up when you go to like Staples or Office Depot or Office Max or Best Buy and see if they sell discs. I know I just bought a computer system for work and it comes with a Windows 10 disc.
Yep, and I looked at buying a new computer because there's literally such a marginal price between a computer and Windows 10 now that right. It's almost worth it to buy a computer. But I went so all out when I built this one, I just thought it would be worth it to upgrade.
Yeah, I think the retail price, and don't quote me on this, but the retail price on Windows 10 is at least over 100, you know, it's between 100 and 150. So that's the home edition, and then there's a professional edition. So you've got that kind of cost. And then, you know, as far as the other hardware, you have to weigh your investment in, you know, if you were to look at a new system, I don't even know what desktops go for, but let's say the average price might be somewhere around $400-$500, and they include the OS in that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there you go.
If All right, that helps.
Well, yeah, I hope that helps. Thank you for calling. Scott in New Lisbon, your turn now. Hi, Scott. Scott, are you there?
Yeah, this is Jim.
Oh, Jim, okay.
Hi, Jim.
What can we do for you?
Oh, I thought I was calling Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yeah, you are.
This, oh, okay.
You're on the Larry Mueller Show, and you have a question about...
My iPhone, the version of software that it upgraded to, and the way it did it, I didn't have to have it plugged in. It just did it overnight, and I'm just wondering if it's safe.
Hmm.
So you're saying your phone updated?
Yeah, my iPhone. Yeah, my iPhone just updated by itself, and used to have to do something, like plug it in and have it be between, you know, late night hours.
Yeah, it used to want to be hooked up to a system to be, you know, updated.
I got the same thing the other day.
So did yours work okay, or did you not do it?
Well, I just did it automatically
at
night.
Huh.
I got about three notices that it was going to happen, and it happened last night, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, so
it's working today.
So you get notices on your iPhone that the update's happening. I get notices on my Android, and then they tell you to pick your time, whether or not you want to do it now or later.
they just said we're doing it late at night. So...
Yeah, they're pretty much in control of that. So if they tell you an update's coming, you're taking it. It's, at some point in time, you're going to take it from them. So I guess if it, you know, to me, if you're getting warning that your phone is going to be updated, if you know how to back up the data on your phone so that in the event it gets crashed, and I know years ago when I had an Apple phone, if an update crashed it, they called it being bricked, because you could just throw it like a brick. So if you're being warned about updates, just make sure you back up, you know, the data on it that is important to you, whether it's pictures or music or contacts or, you know, messages and stuff like that. And then, you know, if it works fine after the update, then you're okay.
Yeah, Jill chimed in to say there is a setting on your phone to control when the updates happen if you want that to happen. So just as a reminder, they just told me they were going to do it late at night, and that was fine with me because I'd be sleeping. you go.
And the other thing is sometimes it takes a while.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's an update that takes maybe 10 minutes. Sometimes it takes maybe a half hour, and you don't have a half hour to give to them during the day.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks for that call. Steve in South Milwaukee, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Steve.
Oh, thank you for the program.
Sure.
I'm wondering about a Chromebook to use it for financial matters. People tell me, oh, don't worry about it. It's a Chromebook. It'll be fine, which means I get worried. So I'm wondering if I could find some extra steps to take as far as settings with the Chromebook and also any outside services. You should know I've already taken the first step that I don't use it with Wi-Fi. I have a cable connection.
You could probably find an antivirus and malware program for it. Chromebook's controlled by Google.
Yeah.
So... you can go in their Play Store and look for those kind of application software to download on your system.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
I'd go right there. My daughter uses a Chromebook for school, so, and I don't know, they've got some controls on it that are school controls too. So that can, and you can, I'm sure you can get that at the Apple.
Yeah, and make sure you use the double authentication on your Google account.
Yes.
So that, you know, in the event that somebody's trying to compromise it somehow, that you have your correct contact information in there.
Yep. There you go.
They use that all the time.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve. Let's go to Cheryl next in Conover. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Hey, I am a Toshiba diehard satellite laptop person, and I am making the one that I have with Windows 7 last until hopefully I die, but that's 20 more years, I'm hoping.
Okay.
That's a long time.
Okay, I bought the 14-inch screen so that I wouldn't have to buy one of those Surface Pros or whatever. It kind of was a happy medium. But I need a new computer, and I really am hesitant. The only one that I look at that has similarities to Toshiba is Lenovo. What is your opinion if I would replace a 14-inch screen Toshiba satellite laptop?
What are the important things that you're looking for? Are you looking for the size of the screen, the clarity, the weight, speed?
I'm a computer person.
Uh-huh.
I'm a real estate broker.
Okay.
I keep Word documents on there. I have Word 2003, which works just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I have the entire suite, you know, with Publisher and everything. And so I use it primarily for that. I have Outlook email that gets directly loaded to my computer, which I use for one of my emails, and then I use Gmail for another email. So it's really the old computer use for documents.
Do you take it out with you at all?
Everywhere.
Okay.
It goes with me.
Okay.
So I would think, you know, the screen and the weight would be important.
Yes.
And also the longevity of the battery life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like is, you know, satellites, the old Toshiba satellites were made to be a working person's computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what do we got for options for Cheryl?
And you want to stay with Windows?
Well, yeah, I've got an iPhone, but I don't know if I'm ready to jump into a Mac.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But if I were and had the courage,
mm-hmm.
maybe a recommendation for both a Mac or the other. And then I can go and look at them and play with them and see which one works the best. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would look at, like, the Microsoft Surface Pro, the Mac Air, and maybe some of the other larger tablets, the 12-inch tablets, for, you know, the clarity of the screen. As far as the processing and the speed, those will all probably keep you very happy, and they'll all support all the applications that you talked about using. So even moving over to the Mac, I don't see that really being
an issue.
That's
a simple.
Yeah, there might
be surprised.
You know, in terms of learning about file management, might be a little bit different, but everything else probably be, you know, just fine in making the transition. And then also in terms of looking at those tablets, they're going to be lighter. The battery life will be longer. The screen will be clearer. And it'll be a little bit smaller footprint. And you'll say, well, how is it going to be better with the screen if it's a little bit smaller? It's pretty amazing how clear those are. I mean, when you think about what they've done with your phones, now increase the size of your phone to 12 inches.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, there are keyboards for the tablets. So there are some hybrids where there are tablets with keyboards and you can look at those as well. I believe Toshiba probably makes some of those. So
worth a
have
look.
Fun shopping. You know, you got 20 years to do that.
Cheryl, good luck. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Oh, you can join in too. Lots of
she
open
said
line.
20 years.
Yeah, let's hope it's longer. You can join in, too. Open lines get you out pretty quickly here. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Talking today with Peter Green of InfoStar.com. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at your computer today and your software with Peter Green of Infostar.com. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. A line open for you at 1-800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Cheryl in Berlin has something for us next. Hi, Cheryl.
Hello. Yes, I keep getting these pop-up ads on the right-hand side of my computer screen. And there's always a few musical notes, and it's one after the other. How can I make them stop coming?
Which operating system are you using? Using Windows?
Yes, Windows 10.
So is it coming up in one of your browsers? Are you using like Windows Edge Explorer or Firefox? Do you know?
I use Google.
Google, okay. You should be able to go into the settings of Google and stop pop-ups. So what you may want to do is a search, you know, since you're using Google Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, how do I stop pop-ups? And it'll give you, there's tutorials sometimes on YouTube. There's videos to, you know, that you can watch that'll step you through to show you exactly how to do that. Or there are even pages that people have written to step you through that.
Yeah, should be able to go right to settings and do it. Mm-hmm. But if you want, you know, if you want to know exactly how it's done.
Yeah.
Is there any browser that's better than another one?
It's actually a good idea to have probably two or three on your system to see how they react. Sometimes people have problems where, like you say, you're having pop-up issues. So Mozilla Firefox is a popular one. Edge comes with Windows. Some people even go back to Internet Explorer. So if you do a search on your system for Internet Explorer, that'll come up. And you can use that. You can actually right mouse click on that after the search and then add it to your taskbar or your start menu. If some people need to use the old version of how Windows had a browser called Internet Explorer,
mm-hmm.
because with Windows 10, they came out with Edge and they said, we're done supporting Internet Explorer. But not everybody caught up to that.
Yeah.
So it's still out there on the operating system.
And sometimes, you know, if I go to one, I'm having a little trouble. I just go to another, the second one that I've got.
Yep.
And
Safari,
it works.
Safari's popular.
Yeah, I've got Safari.
That's, you know, from Apple, but it also works on Windows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like Safari. Yeah. There you go. Lots of choices there.
And I highly recommend that if you don't have one, you should get one of those.
Yeah.
At least one of those.
Yep. There you go, Cheryl. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Mike and Nina, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I've got a question for you. I've got two laptops. My wife uses one and I use the other, but she wants to get an iPad. You know, I want to get rid of one of my laptops, but I've been out looking at either the iPad Air or the iPad Pro. And I don't know if she really needs a pro to do what she does, like play Hit It Rich or Facebook, you know, on it. So is it worth the money to go up to a pro from the Air?
Well, when you buy the top of the line, people, they always question whether or not, you know, is it really the top of the line? I think you have to, you know, look at whatever you pick for what you're going to use it for. So if it's just for looking at Facebook pages, email, reading magazines.
Solitaire,
you
simple
know,
game.
Playing games, playing Scrabble, playing Wheel of Fortune, card games. You know, what are you using it for? Reading email?
If it's just that.
You don't really need a lot of horsepower to do that. Yeah, it'll get faster on the faster, you know, systems. So, you know, spending the extra $200-$300, is it worth it? You know, everybody's different. But, you know, typically on an Apple iPad of whatever it is, it's all those things that we just mentioned that people use it for. You typically don't use it for, you know, sitting down and composing a letter. You can do it compose an email on it, but then you may want to add a keyboard to it, because if you do that a lot, it might be a little cumbersome using the, you know, keyboard that shows up on your screen. So, you know, you have to weigh those things. What are you really using the iPad, the tablet for?
Yeah, she's probably not playing high-powered games.
Right.
But now, it's like, should I get the 64 gigabyte, or should I jump up for the extra $100 for 256?
I would invest the extra $100.
Yeah. You're going to be happier.
You'll like having the extra speed, because you can download things on it. So having the extra space will help both speed-wise and give you a little bit more flexibility of, you know, maybe movies or, you know, things that you can take with you on a trip.
Yeah, makes good sense.
Yep, that's a good question.
Thanks, Mike. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Tom in Strum, Wisconsin next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Say, I've got a Windows 10 computer, and our secret antivirus has been capturing in quarantine a Trojan virus. I'm really bad at backing things onto my external hard drive. Am I safe to be doing that with these files, or am I going to be transferring something onto that hard drive? Don't know if it's good to do it or if I should get this thing fixed first.
I would definitely make sure that you've done a thorough scan of your system. So with Windows 10, you've got Windows Defender. Make sure that that's updated. And you can use Windows 10 to do, you know, scans. There are also a number of antivirus programs out there that you can get, some of which are free, and then they have, you know, paid-for versions of them. And then as far as the Windows 10 backup, Windows 10 has a backup within it that you can use, but I actually use something that's separate. The one that I use is called Macrium, M-A-C-R-I-U-M. It also has protection against ransomware, so it encrypts the backups, and it's a little bit more safer in that regard.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to configure. You can make different backup sets for different days. It'll automatically merge backup sets over time, you know, to keep things clean so it doesn't, you know, like you feel like you got to manage your backup files.
Yeah.
You know, when time expires and says, hey, it's a month's past, you don't need that one anymore, and then it moves on.
So what's the name of that again?
Macrium.
Macrium.
And there's a free version of that out there as well.
Tom, does that help? I think we lost Tom. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Disinfection is important, making sure your system's clean, because you don't want to transfer files to a backup that are infected.
Trevor from Minocqua is wondering if it's better to keep a desktop PC on 24/7 or just turn it off.
I turn mine off at the end of the day. Power conservation, you could put it to sleep. One system I put to sleep, one I turn off. I trust my Apple system to sleep. I turn my Windows system off. Servers, they keep on 24/7 because they have to be. So what I'm pointing out is it's a matter of use and preference. My Windows system, I feel comfortable starting it new every day, because Windows is not as good with the memory management in Windows. So starting fresh every day is a good thing. Servers are a little different, even if they are Windows. Sometimes they have to be rebooted, probably more often than Apple servers. But Apple machines I feel comfortable putting to sleep, because they're better at memory management.
Yeah.
So part of it is power.
Yeah.
Conservation. The other part is operating system and how it works and performs.
Well, Peter Green, our guest today, and he is the owner of Infostar.com. Great to have him with us today. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. By the way, Doug emailed to ask whether on your site, he can find the info about Bluekeep.
If you go to today's top 10, the current top 10, it's link number 10.
So link number, and as a matter of fact, we're going to take a look now at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then I'll be back with Peter Green. Pete will be with us right up until 12:30 today, and we'll be going over that top 10 list when we come out of the news. So we'll talk a little bit more about it then. Stay with us. Peter Green with us right up till 12:30. We'll take a look at the news, and then we'll be back. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your computer and software with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Always great to have him come by, and certainly thanks so much for listening in. This time of the show, when Pete's on, we always go to his top 10 list, a list of the 10 places he found that might be interesting for you. So, Pete, what have you got for us today?
All right, so this first one, actually I found it because I have problems with groundhogs where mm-hmm. I live, and it's called Internet Center for Wildlife Damage Management, and their website is icwdm.com, and it's a nonprofit grant-funded site that provides research-based information on how to handle wildlife damage problems responsibly. And I believe two key people are from UW-Stevens Point Extension and also from Cornell mm-hmm. University in New York. Number two is called RIKE, W-R-I-K-E.com, and it's a collaborative work management platform. They claim to have over 18,000 organizations with over 2 million users worldwide, and they have a free version of what's up there for 5 users or less. So mm-hmm. that might be useful for some people. Number three is called lineups.com, just like it sounds, lineups.com. And representative of the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and college football, and sports betting. If you want information data about those sports,
that's
there's
the place
a
to
lot
go.
There, and it's well organized. Number four, you know, we've had the stuff about measles in the news. Last show I mentioned one of the websites I've got listed here, but start with immunize.org. It's the Immunization Action Coalition, which works to increase immunization rates and prevent disease by creating educational material and just making people aware about why we do these things. Number five is HRSA.gov. It's Health Resources and Services Administration, which is one of our federal agencies. And there are so many programs that affect millions of Americans for affordable health care. This is the agency that oversees it. Number six is something that I found that's actually in French. So if you go to this, you're going to need to use a translator. So I use Google Chrome, and it helps translate from French to English. It's called internetwithoutborders.org, and basically their mission is internet access is a fundamental right, and it was founded in 2007, and it's a French association. Number seven is called Shutterstock. And they have images for every project, plans for every budget, they claim. But what's phenomenal is they have access to, that you would have access to over 267 million images.
Wow.
And that they claim to add 150,000 new ones every day. That's got to be massive to organize and house that amount of data. Number eight is called Viewpoints. They have access to reviews of products and services, and I listed some others to use. And then there's a website that actually is a web blog about that wrote about 28 product review websites. So there's a lot of good stuff there. Number nine is called MakeUseOf.com, also founded in 2007. It's an online publication that issues tips and guides on how to make the most of the internet, computer software, and mobile apps. Their mission is to help users understand, navigate modern trends in consumer technology. Number 10's got the information about the Bluekeep issue that's with legacy Windows versions. And the website is called Windows101Tricks.com. A lot of information about Windows 10, news, tips, tweaks, error fixes, and going to the next build, things like that. And number 11 is the stuff we talked about with Apple and iTunes and how That's they're breaking that there. Up. So there's a lot of good links there.
And from that, we go back to the phones. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Harold and Superior up next, and then I think Sue and Baraboo. But let's get to Harold first from Superior.
Well, good afternoon. Nice to hear your voices again.
Thank you.
Hi.
I when you were talking about browsers, and this isn't the topic of my call, I side note just, I didn't hear you mention Chrome, and certainly Chrome is big time since, you know, like I have two Chromebooks that run, the operating system runs off Chrome, and Google's got a pretty good handle on all of that.
Yeah, I mentioned I use Chrome all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that part.
Yep.
And, yeah. Anyhow, my Windows is broken.
When you say broken, is it broken like the screen is cracked, or is it not coming?
Not physically. The operating system. I just have some something that went haywire. It may be that I was installing a graphics driver, and it went kaput in the middle of it. I'm not positive, but I've even after about 30 hours on this, I pulled my graphics card out and thought, well, maybe Windows would go back and search for, you know, some basic graphics, and using an older monitor as well. And but that didn't work. And, you know, I have backups and repairs like, AOMI has been a big one, and they have AOMI quick rebuild or quick, you know, this and that, and supposedly you can do this and that, and you're back into Windows. Just getting into safe mode has been difficult.
So Harold, let me ask you some questions here, so see if we can help you out. So your system, you say, is broken. Does it come up to a safe mode screen? Does it come up to a Windows desktop?
Got it running, so it will go into safe mode. And
okay.
And I've been in so many different modes. And I put it away about a week ago. I'm could hardly tell you where it's at right now, but it I can get into Windows barely.
Okay.
And it's I had to use an old keyboard. Because USB does not work for some reason.
All right, so
I don't have a new, older USB mouse anymore. I threw it out.
All right, so here are some of your options. One is if you can get into safe mode, you can type recovery or restore, and then try to do, you know, I didn't mention this earlier, but you could try to, you know, use one of your earlier restore points and go back to prior to when you had any problems. The other issue to look at is things that I mentioned before, is either having a Windows disk and doing a Windows repair, or looking up using DISM as a command prompt to What it does is it checks all the operating system files to see if there are any damaged files and restore them to working condition. And then the other one is to look at the scan now command, which does the same thing, but it doesn't go online with the Microsoft site. That's what the DISM command line does. It actually checks with Microsoft online and actively does that. The scan now will try to do that locally. Both of those work, but
sure.
You know, if they can fix your system, it'll try to fix it that way. If it's a hardware issue and none of those fixes work, then there could be a problem with, like you said, the video card or another piece of hardware that could be causing issues with it not coming up.
So there you go, Harold. Good luck. Appreciate your call. I want to give Sue and Baraboo a chance to join in. Sue, hello to you.
Hey. So my question, because I was listening to the Larry Mueller show downstairs in my basement when I was working, and I have a laptop that it was on, and then I have Bluetooth to a couple different speakers, like a JBL Flip 4 and a PowerPulse. But then this other thing popped up, and now there's two of them, and it says that I'm connected. So I'm wondering, and it's not my devices. I mean, I looked all over my house, and I know I don't have this, so I, you know, put in what the initials were, and it looks like maybe it's an Apple Watch. It's AC690X_BLE. And it says I'm connected, but it won't let me, like, select it to forget this device. Any ideas? No, that's what I thought.
Somehow from next door or something?
So it says you're connected to the device?
Yeah. It says, and now it's not just one, now it's two that I'm connected to. And to my knowledge, and I'm pretty sure that it's nothing that I have. I mean, I have some other, you know.
Have you looked, have you done a search to see if you can identify what that might be for?
How would I do that?
That's well, I mean, search online with what you just gave us.
Oh, yeah, I did. So what it said when I put that in, it says that, I guess I have to go back to where it was, that it's an Apple Watch. And I do not have an Apple Watch, so I'm envisioning, you know, like a house next to me, if they're gone, that their Apple Watches are playing. I mean, mostly I play public radio.
Yeah, usually, so though, okay. When you're connected, you have to, you know, allow the connection to, you know, to happen, that there's...
Okay, well, what I was hoping, because then in going further online, it says, you know, to just tap the gear, which it does not have a gear. It doesn't allow me. It doesn't allow me to swipe it and to say unpair, or, you know, like I can click on something and forget this device, but it's not allowing me to do any of that. So do I not worry about it?
So what kind of laptop do you have?
iPad.
Oh, so you
or
use...
the laptop is MacBook Air, but I was using the iPad, but, you know, either way.
So you actually, you can't click on it and say forget it?
No. Nope.
It won't?
If I click on it, it doesn't do, it won't let me swipe this or that. I can get rid of it, which I'm going to do right now by turning off the Bluetooth. Now I turn the Bluetooth back on, but then underneath the three that are mine, Bose, JBL, PowerPulse, it's got other devices, which is scrolling. And then here we have, that pops up, you know, the other devices, AC690X_BLE, and not only one, but shortly there will be another one. And it, you know, it just seems like I should, and then if I click on that, so I just touched it, and then it connects me. I can't get rid of it.
So you're actually
like
so you're actually connected to it. It's not just listening. It's so it's not just listening, but it's saying it's actually connected to it.
Correct, because I thought if I would, you know, select it, that like with the other ones, I can go up like on the Bose. I can click on that, and it'll go up to say forget this device. And I've had to do that to like repair it.
Wow.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is that you had a neighbor visit and, you know, you talked about doing this and I forgot about having it done.
I've never heard this one before.
Yeah. But that wouldn't really make, I mean, it couldn't be somebody that just visited and connected. And besides that, I don't know. I don't even know anybody with an Apple Watch, to be perfectly honest. But you have to be within range, right?
Yeah, correct.
You have to be within range to be Bluetooth connected.
Yeah. Maybe there's something else, some other device laying around that you just don't know.
Is there a burglar upstairs on the second floor?
That I've had a lot of water damage. I've had people in and out of my house so much. So anyway, well, thank you for...
Well, you know, that's the other thing. Maybe somebody left something behind that you're just not seeing.
Ooh.
Look around.
Yeah. But then, but that's not like, you know, like your phone or something that you can get a tone. I can't get any tone.
Right.
Well, anyway, so there's a mystery for you.
All right. Well, I'm I'm sorry for your...
It's one of those that we'd have to be there in person to just kind of explore what's going on.
Just
from the description, it's just hard to...
If you figure it out, let me know, will you, Sue? I would love to hear the response to that, because the answer to that, because I can't, I don't know. That's one we've never heard, for sure. Well, sorry. Let's go to Gary in Madison. Your turn. Hi, Gary.
Yeah. I have a son who is going to be going to MATC, and he's been thinking, okay, I need a laptop, and he doesn't want an Apple because he had a bad experience with one. He mentioned something about a Chromebook. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not a gamer. You know, this is going to be for school. Any recommendations on that? And is the Chromebook a good choice?
I would. You know what I'd do? Is Madison College, did you say he's going to go to?
MATC, yep.
I would call Madison College and ask them what they are recommending.
That was exactly what I was going to
say. Is that what you're going to say?
Yep.
Because
they must put out something where they recommend incoming.
They recommend, because there are some, and sometimes it depends on what he's kind of going to major in too.
They may even have a buy-in program where it's the price is, you know, a special reduced price.
Oh, okay.
I would definitely go there, because there are some, you know, they may say you should definitely get, you know, an Apple or something,
okay.
You know, because you'll want it compatible with, you know, the whatever courses where those are needed, you're going to want to have those.
And my daughter went the graphics route, and so she needed an Apple because those are the products that she was using.
Yeah,
for graphics design. So it just depends. But I would definitely check with the school first. And like I said, they may have a list, and they may also have units at a discounted price that are available from certain vendors.
Yeah.
What department would I call to get that answered?
You probably look at their website first.
You can look at their website first. Otherwise, just call a general number for the university or for Madison College, and they will they'll just say, oh, you need to talk to so-and-so, and they'll connect you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Gary.
Good luck.
Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234, although we're starting to run a little bit short of time. We can still get you in. Let's see. I was looking through the emails that we have that we may not have answered yet. And Laura, I guess we talked about it, the ease of which we could upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 10. We had a question in that regard.
Just got to be real careful about having the right kind of hardware to support the upgrade if you go from 7 to 10.
So she needs to have make sure she's got enough power there.
Yeah, and you can run some compatibility tests in terms of, you know, what software will work on that system. You know, when you go from 7 to 10.
Are you going to have to reinstall all your apps?
Not necessarily, but some might have to. And some of the older programs you might have to run in, they call it compatibility mode. So you run it in Windows 10, but you run the app from the shortcut. You set it up specifically to run through a compatibility mode. So there are little tricks that you can do to use the older applications on the newer Windows 10 operating system.
Anything else in the way of tech news that you're keeping an eye on right now?
Just trying to get through the new latest build, the 1903. Some people say, you know, wait a little bit longer. I didn't have that luxury because I was having problems and I wanted to get my system updated. So I did the DISM, the scan now, and then moved forward to the 1903. I don't know all the new features that are there, but I do know that it takes up twice as much hard drive space as the prior version. So when you download this file, it's almost five gig of space. So it doesn't even fit on a conventional DVD. You need to use a dual layer. So, you know, the download size alone is pretty substantial. So if you don't have a large pipe broadband connection, the dial-in connection that the gentleman, one of our callers mentioned, could be pretty significant.
Oh, man. And if you're going to buy a new computer, again, power-wise, what do you want to just shoot for?
I would say, you know, if you want to be real happy and you want to be stable for a while, 32 gigs of RAM is probably going to be a pretty good fit, and terabyte of hard drive space and a pretty decent video card, and you'll have a good time.
Well, I hope that's the case. Mm-hmm. I hope that's the case for everybody. And yep. And what are we talking about in terms of price these days?
Price, good solid desktops, I'd say, are probably priced between $500 to $1,000. And again, it just depends on the options you pick and the CPU. You know, whether it's an i7 or an AMD Ryzen processor. People say those are gaming systems, but to be honest with you, I consider them pretty standard business computers as well.
So we've got a, boy, so we've,
you know,
really.
People like the two screens. They like the speed. They like the shutdown speed. They like it coming up fast. When you start putting less money at it, you know, you start compromising on components and things get slower.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's the whole thing about, if I'm going to spend the money, I'm probably going to spend a couple $100 more and make sure I've got something that's going to last for a little while. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Apple, too. Apple choices are good, too.
Yeah. I'm a kind of an Apple person. So.
I love my iMac.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. He'll be back in a couple of months and we'll do this all over again. Tomorrow we'll talk to Victoria Houston about her new Loon Lake Mystery book. I read it and it's a lot of fun. And then we'll take a look at biobanks of health data. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.